Welcome to Argue the Toss from GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are. And today it is actually games.
Yeah, we promised you a games episode last week. And we have quite a lot of games to talk about today.
We do, but it is Season 4, Episode 9. Just flip that in before you get on a roll. So, our topic, Drew?
Yeah, we spent the weekend at EGX Res in London. It's a smaller sister event to EGX, which takes place in Birmingham, and it's kind of got more of a focus on indie games and other things and experiences. It was a really great time.
It was. It's a really nice event. I've never been either. So it was really nice. Didn't know what to expect. It's a really nice venue. Really unusual kind of setting. It's in the Tobacco Docks in sort of East London. So it's this sort of Victorian warehouse thing that's been transformed into offices and sort of venue spaces, as opposed to the standard conference hall that you might get a games expo in.
It was a really nice venue. It was a bit confusingly laid out, but nice.
Yeah, we were saying it was a bit like a Dishonored 2 level. lots of Victorian elevators and walkways and staircases.
And rafters.
Lots of rafters. But it was cool, and there were lots of games there. Apparently over 200 games.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Yep, me too. And within that, what's special about EGX is it has a little section called the Left Field Collection, which is 20 sort of indie games from really small creators. The people aren't small, they're probably averagely sized.
Yeah, but some of them are small.
Teams are small and who might not otherwise get a platform, so they haven't got publishers and things like that, and they're just doing interesting weird shit basically. We scoured the show floor.
We did. We played a bunch of stuff.
We did
some and, really interesting stuff there.
So we've got some game. I think we've got about 11 or 12 games that we've picked out that we played and enjoyed. We also went to some talks, didn't we?
We did, so a couple of interesting talks by the developers of Night in the Woods, and one about systemic mechanics by Tom Francis, who is the developer of Gunpoint and Heat Signature, which were two of my favourite games, and devs from Dishonored 2 and FTL and Into the Breach. That was a really interesting talk. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, it was good. I think I was very tired that morning. So I might have drifted a little bit, but no, it was. It was good. It was interesting. It's good for me as a writer to think about the systemic side of game development. So it was a good one for me to go to.
Yeah.
Right.
But we also saw a bunch of games.
Here we are with the games. The games we loved from EGX Res 2018.
Yeah, and like we should say, we played a lot of games and we talked to a lot of people. And if we talked to you and we've missed out your game on this one, we're sorry. It's not because we didn't like it, just because we forgot it in the list of the huge list of games that we had.
Yeah,
so these aren't favorites. These are just kind of the ones
the ones we remember in the sort of manic three and a half days of EGX Res, and there were ones I played on the last day when I decided, when I was choosing games to play, I was like, I can't read anymore, my brain cannot read things.
Slightly flagging at the end.
So first up, we've got Over the Alps.
Over the Alps, indeed.
Which is by Stave Studios, and the team behind that used to be at Fail Better. So it's going to look gorgeous, and the storytelling is going to be top-notch. So they're the Fallen London, Sunless Skies kind of people. So want to give a little... to Over the Alps.
I mean, it's a kind of text-based, postcard-based, choose your own adventure sounds simplistic, but it's a good way in any of describing the alpha that they have there. in which you play a spy who is traveling over the Alps through Switzerland just before and during the outbreak of World War II. Yeah. And it's kind of presented in this, it's got this gorgeous art style, and it's presented in, the story is presented with the framing device that you are sending secret postcards with an invisible ink back to your kind of handler, who I think was named Elsa, or something, a name similar to that. And it plays out kind of like what it reminded me of most, not so much in the presentation, but in the way that your choices and text are presented, of 80 Days, in which one of the postcards will have a bit of the story, you know, a paragraph of story on it, and you will get to choose between three like follow-up paragraphs to describe how you dealt with the situation. Yeah. And yeah, it's a really kind of interesting and tense experience, because very early on in the demo that they had, you pick up someone who is following you, and there's a meter on the top which kind of tells you vaguely how close and how far away they are to catching you. And yeah, it's just, it's a very, like, it was very tense for a text-based game, I thought. I did feel like there was someone following me, and I had to think on my feet rather than...
Yeah, there was a tension there, and things like when their guards get on the train and you decide whether to try and blend into the crowd, so your choices are postage stamps,
yes,
which then go onto the postcard, which was really nice, and it's like blend... What are the other ones? Charm.
Yeah.
And the other one was like, so not aggressive, but it was something more...
It's like active or...
activist. Yeah.
I can't remember what the word was.
Yeah.
And there's also stuff like charity. There's all sorts of different ones which all have their own little stamp design.
Yeah, which then goes onto the postcard.
Willful.
So you can... Yeah. Oh, that's it. And then you can choose to, you know, whether you decide to pull the brim of your hat down and just, you know, pop your collar up to blend with the crowd, or if you like make a break for it out the window and head to the roof of the train. And there is a real sense of tension and that kind of 1940s spy film thriller, 39 Steps type Third Man kind of thing going on, which is really nice. I mean, it's very stylish, it's really polished, you can tell there's a lot of research has gone in. So yeah, it's a really nice one. So it's a must buy, really.
Yeah, I'm gonna Steam wishlist this one. Or I'm not sure what it is actually coming out on. Is it?
It's PC, mobile. Yeah, it's coming out on PC as well as iPad. It was being demoed on an iPad, but it is heading to PC. And I really hope they get a publisher picks them up. I'd be very surprised if they don't, because it's just so polished. They're so capable.
This early state, it just looked absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, it did. Really did. Yeah. What's next up on our list?
We love this one.
this is kind of the game that everybody was sort of talking and smiling about at the show. And it's called Fogs.
It is.
and it's from a little team of three developers based up in Scotland called Bitloom, and it's being published by CoatSync. They just picked up a publisher very, very recently. And it's basically, you play a two-headed sausage dog. You have two controls, which is like, well, apart from like walk and stuff, you have bite and stretch. And it's a co-op game, so you each control a head.
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically it could be played single player as well, because like the demo that they had showed how it would play on one controller. So even though you could have like two players playing on the one controller, because you only need one side of it each, you could, I guess, play it on your own. But that would kind of, I think that would take something out of it.
Oh god, it really would, because you were just like, you just like marched straight off, and so my little dog head was like just being dragged along, kind of thing. Yeah. I was trying to figure things out, and then it was just this funny moment where you'd kind of bitten hold of something, and my dog had kind of wandered off the edge of this block thing, this kind of cliff, and you were like, What are you doing? And you let go, and then I was slowly falling off. You were like scrabbling to try and keep us both up. It was just a really hilarious, fun game, with like really fun physics. So the one dog head can bite onto something to anchor you, and then the other person kind of stretches the dog. So it stretches like incredibly long, and then can like swing onto different posts, and then they bite, and then you swing, and so you just cooperatively have to navigate these spaces and things and sort of puzzles.
And it's got this kind of very kind of bouncy physics system, which and it's one of those things. It reminded me a lot of Gang Beasts in that it kind of looks like claymation in a sort of, not well, not claymation, but it kind of looks like your characters are made of clay or have that kind of like
So
physicality to them.
physicality,
And your controls are like slightly divorced from what the characters actually do. There's a little bit of lag there, and it's not exact. You're not going to be able to do like speed run, like pixel
The
perfect speed runs of this game.
no.
And it just leads to this sort of chaos, yeah,
Hilarity.
kind of chaotic. It's just so much fun. We really enjoyed it. The puzzles were good. I can't wait for that to come out.
It was really good. And then they had a life-size dog bed and a plushy
Yeah,
fog
fog.
for people to pose with. So if you go onto Twitter, you'll see it was a bit selfie-tastic with the fogs. That was a good fun one that made everybody smile. In the same section, this was in the Double Fine room, wasn't it? Another one is our next one is Knights and Bikes by Foam Sword. And this is a team with people from Little Big Planet and Tearaway. Some good pedigree there in the team. And it's a sort of Goonies style. Well, you pick up this one because I did the last one.
It's kids on bikes, so yeah, it's very much the kind of Goonies premise. Gameplay wise, it's sort of a co-op, kind of top down. The thing it most reminded me of was brawling, co-op brawling, two-dimensional brawling games Double Dragon or Streets of Rage, but it's not quite that. It's more sort of madcap and frantic, and has a much sort of bigger world map, which is all in three dimensions. And
And a really charming style.
yeah, it's got a really gorgeous graphical style.
Sort of reminiscent of Rhubarb and Custard, or which people in America might not know, but you can probably Google and find some on YouTube.
And so you kind of play cooperatively as two kids on bikes. You can get off the bikes, and a lot of the puzzles in the demo we played were about separating you from your bike, and you have to get your bike over the obstacle by not being on your bike. And there's a lot of stuff like magnetic cranes and gadgets that you can interact with. And it's kind of a half beat 'em up, half kind of puzzle adventure game, which is just like really super charming.
Yeah, it is. And it does nice things because it kind of represents childhood imagination. So when you come across a warehouse at the scrap heap, it's a castle, like get over the fortress walls and things like that. So like everything is related from a child's point of view of imagination, as opposed to what you're actually seeing, which is really, really lovely. I loved that. So it's got that sort of childlike whimsy to it. And it's set in Cornwall, which is it's sort of based on childhood memories growing up in Cornwall. The sort of lead designer Rex Crowell. That's nice because that's sort of regional touch to the game that we don't usually get in games. It's cool. So I'm expecting there'll be more of that will come through as you play the game. Sort of seaside town basically, down on its luck, but still enough fuel for imagination for two kids on bikes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a cute, charming one.
Yeah, that was really good. Ah,
next up.
Next
yes.
up is, yeah, shall I take this one? Because
yeah.
I was there, I think, very enthusiastic about this one. The next game we're going to talk about is Disco Elysium by a studio which I'm not familiar with. They're called Studio, I don't know how, Zaum, but it's stylized ZA/UM, so I don't know how you're supposed to kind of pronounce
it. Oh, it's Zaum, because I spoke to the,
to
the dev, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, this grabbed my attention straight away, and, like, when we walked into that room, I spotted, like, the setup that they had, which was all neon signs and kind of detective noir-looking stuff, and I just thought, right, okay, I'm sold on this, let's go and play that.
I think everybody had that reaction, yeah. To be fair, when they went into that room. It looked, everybody, it was really busy the whole time.
It was. So Disco Elysium is basically a detective RPG in a sort of urban fantasy universe, and it uses, I don't think it's specifically D&D mechanics, but it's all done by dice rolls. So the conversational stuff is all dice roll based, and you will get more or less information based on your character's stats, and all that kind of is very upfront, so it will tell you if you've gotten extra information because you've, like, passed a dice roll. It's got this gorgeous art style, which is, it's kind of an isometric-ish, reminiscent of, like, the Shadowrun games, the Shadowrun Returns games, and Baldur's Gate, and those kind of classic Infinity Engine RPGs, only it's all in 3D this time, and it's a bit more detailed. And it's just a really kind of well-written RPG kind of adventure game. And I went, like, it surprised me at how well-written and funny it was. I got to play it for about 20 minutes, and I was sitting there, and it made me laugh out loud, like, several times, which I'm not, even with funny games, I don't generally do that. But there was a lot of stuff in this that caught me off guard, and I found very funny.
It just looks really nice, polished. Looks like they got their shit together on that one.
Yeah. And, like, from discussing it with the writers and devs, and looking over the shoulders of other people, at the start of the demo that we played, you get to pick between three different kind of archetypes, which are just, you know, builds of characters which the developers have put together in advance. In the full game, you'll be able to do all of that yourself. And depending on which one you have, you can approach the problems really differently, and people are having very different experiences with how they solved the how they interacted with the other characters and how they moved forward in the game. And I think that's kind of what they're going for. They want you to be able to really sort of customize the way you approach the story, is exactly my shit.
I think that was a really popular one. I know a friend of mine said I couldn't get onto that because it was just busy the whole time, and they'd spent quite a lot of money on their stand. It had, like, an actual neon sign and stuff for their logo, and it was cool. It was worth it, though. Good looking game. Looking forward to that one.
That's Disco Elysium, which I think immediately Steam wishlisted.
Is it out this year or is it next year?
I thought
it was next year, talking to him, but I could be lying. So just, like, have
not
a look,
sure.
People's.
I thought it was this year. I thought it was late this year.
I'd kind of be surprised if they had something at EGX Res that was that wasn't due around. Yeah, so late next year, maybe early next year. Next up is Haiku Adventure by Small Island Games, and this is a team of two. They put together a demo. They were in the Left Field collection. So was Over the Alps, by the way. That's part of the Left Field collection. Haiku Adventure it looks like the traditional Japanese woodcut style art, and it is freaking gorgeous. They've just unbelievable. I was talking to James, and there's just two of them working on this game, and they've spent 3 months on it so far, and it looks incredible. incredible. I couldn't believe it. I was just it's our game, and I was just like, what have we been doing for 18 months when these people have done this incredible thing? And he was just like, oh, it's kind of janky and not everything works, but it seriously does not look janky. So it's kind of a 2D sort of a yeah, it pretty much is 2D, although you can have paths that go up the top of the screen, which kind of give the impression that you're walking off into the distance. But so you play as this old Japanese man, and you collect lines of haiku poetry, which is a sort of five line sort of poetry system, Japanese poetry genre. So you collect lines of poetry, and then you can assemble them in different ways to solve puzzles. So it's actually a really interesting mechanic. So you walk around the world and you click on things and interact with things, and then there's something to solve to open up the next part of the world. And you sort of click on a bird or something, and there's some beautiful line of poetry will then go into your inventory. And you go into your inventory and you can put these poems together in certain ways, and sort of make sense of the lines of poetry to solve puzzles. And yeah, so it was a fairly short demo. There were some bits that they had to sort of talk people through because stuff wasn't as signposted as well as they'd like. So obviously it's like 3 months. It's really early in development. It's incredible that they were that polished. But it looks really interesting. It's doing really nice, interesting things with language and puzzle design, basically. Nice.
Cool.
Check it out.
I know that it didn't pass me by. I saw that and meant to play it and then just didn't get around to it in the end.
That's
But
the story of
yeah.
Rezt. Yeah, especially Left Field. I could have probably happily played all 20 or 21 games in there. But yeah. So, Haiku Adventure, check it out.
Small Island Games.
Yep.
Okay. So another thing that we saw in the Left Field collection, which unfortunately you cannot get your hands on yourself, is the Bitsy Boutique, which I really liked. If you're not familiar, Bitsy is an engine for making like sort of small games, small kind of top. Well, I say top down games. That's the kind of easy way of doing. People have done like first person games in it as well, which is amazing. But it's you can find it on what? Oh, sorry, let me just look up the website.
So Bitsy is basically a free tool to make games in sort of using kind of 8-bit style tool tiles. And there, I think there are only four colors. So it's like a really is a tool, a game making tool with like massive limitations, which means that the games that come through tend to be a small, although there have been big games, but they also are really inventive because they have these limitations, and they tend to be narrative based, and quite often they're quite personal things and sort of reflective. And so the Bitsy Boutique, but you play them online, so you can find them on itch and things like that, and people's websites and whatnot. And so Mark Wonnicott, who is quite big in the Bitsy community, decided they wanted a physical place so they could take Bitsy games on event. And he created it's like a treasure chest
It's
with
really
little
gorgeous.
theater curtains around the screen. And yeah, so it's got like controls, little tiny controls,
Little
and
wooden keys.
yeah, it is. It's really beautiful bit of like craft, and yeah, craft and technology. It's just like the complete, it's like the sort of embodiment of indie game development, sort of like grassroots indie. And it has 200 Bitsy games on there to choose from various creators. So yeah, if you don't know anything about Bitsy, it's check it out.
Yep, you can Google it and find it pretty easily.
Yeah. I think at the moment there are only like 700 odd or something. The last figure I had was 650, but it's probably increased by that because bits of creators tend to create quite quickly.
Yeah.
So it could be like 700 odd Bitsy games in the whole world as we know it, because this is like a really new, it was only created in like 2016.
Yeah.
So it's quite an exciting space. Yeah, for anyone that's really accessible, for anyone who wants to give it a go.
Yeah. And seeing the box inspired me. Like I'd heard of Bitsy sort of in my periphery like previously, and I think I'd played with it a little bit before, but like just playing with that box and playing a couple of the games, like it inspired me to come home and just start writing my own thing in it. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just...
So its job has been done.
Exactly.
So, next up. Is it Shift Quantum?
No, I've got Get Packing.
Okay, yeah, Get Packing.
Yeah. Get Packing was a really cool little thing. We had to kind of go out of our way to find it. It was in the... well, we were told about it and then had to go to... It was in the Careers Fair section of Resd. And basically, it was one of the... It should have been like in the main area, I think.
I know.
It was so good.
It's not even listed, yeah, because it was just part of a team from Falmouth University, basically,
yes.
Wasn't it? So that's why it was in the Careers Fair.
Yeah,
called, hidden away.
They're called Moonshine Game Studios, and basically the premise of the game is that it's a 2-4 player co-op game in which you play as members of a removal company. And you are given a house in a top-down view with the roof sort of taken off. And you have a van and you go into the house and your job is to kind of strip it down, take everything out to the van and send it off in the van to wherever it's going.
Sounds easy enough, Drew.
It does, yeah,
what,
doesn't it just?
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. So again, this is one of those games which is kind of divorced from its... like your controls are divorced from your kind of characters. Actually, they are very springy, rubber-limbed kind of guys. And you control... You have buttons which control the left and right arms to grip. And you grab onto something and try to pull it away from the wall. But your character's arms are made of rubber, so they will swing it around. And it gets very chaotic very quickly when you're trying to sort of... pull a couch out through a door without breaking it. You don't quite have that fine level of control.
And then
played,
the stuff sort of falls apart, doesn't it? If it gets like stuck on a door jamb or something.
Yeah. It's very good. So if you you like pull the sink out of the wall, water will start coming out of the wall. You also can grab stuff in the garden. You can take a lamppost with you. Like it's kind of crazy and chaotic, and it's just a lot of fun. And we played a 2-player go of it between the two of us, and that was that was crazy. We did quite well, they said, the developers.
Yeah,
said, that's not bad for a first go.
Yeah.
And then they joined in, and we played a 4-player round of it, and it was just total chaos.
It just plummeted. Yeah, because we went from a B to an F rating.
We did, I think.
And we went 4-player. Yeah, and if you press X, the van shuts down, the roller shutter on the van shuts down, and it drives off for like 10 seconds. But if anyone's in the van when you press X, they go as well.
There were more than one point where I just accidentally pressed the X button, like even while I was in the van. I was just, oh gosh.
Yeah, it was so good. And they say they've got plans to have different environments, like sort of, I don't know, military facilities or something, because your removal skills become so good, you're wanted by governments and all sorts.
We played a lot of just like really good couch co-op games in this one.
It was really good fun. It made us want to get A Way Out.
Still need to do that, yeah.
Yeah, I need to do that, because we were just like, co-op is so fun. it was good. So that was Get Packing. And it is Shift Quantum next, is it?
It is Shift Quantum next, yes.
Okay, yes. So whilst Drew was playing Disco Elysium, I was playing Shift Quantum by Fishing Cactus.
Right.
Is the developer, and apparently it's spawned from a Flash game.
A series of Flash games.
Oh, right. Yeah. And it looks gorgeous in its current iteration. It has a sort of cyberpunk, noirish, monochrome kind of cityscape as the backdrop to the game, with sort of hover cars and all, you know, and it's these sort of soft, misty greys and yeah, sort of Neo Tokyo kind of look to it. And it's really beautiful. So that's what sort of makes you stop first off. And then the protagonist is sort of in black trousers and sneakers and a flappy black coat.
Trench coat, yeah.
Yeah, sort of, and the cover art version of the character has this striking canary yellow scarf that kind of flutters on the breeze, which unfortunately wasn't in the sort of demo. So I hope that they add in the scarf, because it's a really nice, it's the only bit of color in the whole
Yeah.
game, and it would just be nice to have that. So the concept is that it's a you've got this backdrop of the city, and it's, I suppose, almost like you're in a skyrise building, and it's, you know, got sort of like glass walls, and so you can see the city. And there are sort of black, you could be standing on a black blocks of varying heights and things, and some of them have spikes at the bottom of the troughs. There are peaks and troughs of these, and you're trying to get to the other side of the screen where there's an exit box. But if you press the trigger button, the right trigger button, everything switches, the whole room kind of shifts upside down, and the negative space of the black becomes white. And yeah, in your upside down world kind of thing. So the ups are downs and the downs are ups, if you see what I mean. So everything shifts around, but it changes how you can make your way to that exit. So you can sort of you can climb and jump, and there are sort of these negative spaces that are sort of grayed out, and you can't press the shift button on those ones, and that's where the sort of like element of strategy comes in. And then there are some blocks that create that you can push and pull around, but if you shift, they become then negative space in the other world. So you can actually be standing on a block, shift the world, and then you're inside the block in the other world, on the other side. So yeah, it's just a really cool geometric puzzler, and we all know how I love those. So yeah. I really loved it. It looks gorgeous. It's got this really nice kind of minimalist, clean lines and music, and you're just trying to get from one side of the screen to the other, and it's got a cool mechanic. I'm in.
Like, again, I saw this one but didn't actually sit down and play it, but it really did look gorgeous, and like I have vague memories of playing like the original Flash games and thinking they were fun. This looks really, really good, and we also really like the kind of background art that they had in it as well, which was all like there's a city in the background and it's all done with it. It's all signs and like buildings and protrusions. It's kind of like, you know, Shanghai or a city like that where you've got and
Sort of layers
yeah,
going back
exactly.
into the
And
distance.
it's got this really strong parallax effect, which sort of it all shifts as you move from left and right in the level, and it just looks so good.
Yeah, it does.
Really enjoyed
Yeah, I'd
it.
like that as my phone background. You know, when you like swipe through your screens on your phone, it'd be
Man.
so cool.
Yeah, I want that as well now.
Yeah, come on, fishing cactus.
Yeah, forget your game. Design my phone wallpaper.
So,
Okay, what's next? Oh, next up was like Roots in the Soil, and this is another one from the Left Field collection. And this one you can go and play yourself for free. It's on itch.io. Is it itch.io or itch.io? I never know how to say that.
I say itch. I
Itch
just
is
say
probably
itch.
yeah. Okay, fair enough. Itch is probably right. So yeah, it's called like Roots in the Soil by Space Backyard, and it's kind of a short story. It's a little miniature narrative experience which takes about, I would say, 2 or 3 minutes. It's not long at all, but it's really interesting the way it's presented. You have you start by looking at a character who is walking through a city-based environment, and you can like when if you download and play it, you'll use your mouse to kind of pan the camera around. the way they had it set up at, in the Left Field Collection, they'd created their own little controller, which was kind of a
controller.
Can with a... Yeah, it was a can with a little plant poking out the top there.
Which is sort of thematic from the game.
Yes.
That's something that both characters in the game have. There's a little... It's like a baked bean can with the wrapper taken off.
Yeah.
With a little plant, a little seedling growing out of it.
And to control the camera, instead of using your mouse, the way it's set up, you just turn the can around and you can spin it around
so
that
cool.
way. It was really nice. Yeah. And kind of as you spin the camera around, there is a split as you go from one side to the other where you... It changes these between two characters and two environments, and one is kind of a modern day looking environment, and one is kind of a more post-apocalyptic looking thing. And you kind of get to look around and see how everything changes and what the differences are between the two environments. And yeah, it's well worth playing. I won't say any more about it. You can just go and download it for free, and I do recommend you play it. It's just a nice little way to spend a few minutes.
Yeah, it is. And really nice art style as well. Just
it is
like,
really gorgeous.
Sort of clean art style. Yeah, it's a nice one that leaves you kind of wondering. Yeah, it's sort of like nice ambiguity to it. And a really nice mechanic, the way you can sort of like turn the camera from one world to the other. And you can do that in like the complete 360. Mm. So you can take yourself into the really modern, clean world and then into the sort of more I guess sort of post apocalyptic kind of. Yeah, it's cool. Really nice idea.
Hmm.
Or you can walk through them in parallel, like have a split screen right
side
down
by
the middle.
Side.
Yeah, it's cool. Give it a go.
Yeah, absolutely recommended.
Like roots in the soil.
Yeah. And next up, and I don't know if you played this one, did you?
I didn't, no.
Blind Drive. Blind Drive is a really sort of fun little game. In it's kind of a comically presented game in which you are forced by a kidnapper who has kidnapped your grandmother to drive a car blindfolded into traffic, and so obviously you have no, like, you do have a heads up display on your screen which kind of shows you where you are in the road, but you can't see where any of the other cars are. You can't see the road itself. There are no graphics. What you have to do is wear headphones. It's a game which kind of requires headphones. And listen out for audio cues to tell you when to steer and which way to go on the road. And it's a very kind of simple idea. And it starts off real easily. If you hear something in your left ear, you swerve to the right. If you hear something in your right ear, you swerve to the left and so on. But it keeps, as the game goes through, it keeps kind of iterating on that and throwing up new challenges like this. So at one point the kidnapper kind of comes up to your car window and puts a pair of earmuffs on you, so it's all now very kind of distant and blurred and it sounds like you're listening through a wall. And then later on he will phone you up and start playing music into your ears as well, so you have to listen to the cars over there. And it's the audio design in it is just perfect. It sounds so good. I think you will need a good pair of headphones for it to fully appreciate it. And one of the nice things about, you know, the Left Field Collection is that all of the sort of setups did have really nice kind of gaming 5.1 surround sound headphones.
Yeah, they really looked after us.
Yeah. And it's a small experience. It's not going to be something that you spend, you know, days of time with, but it's just a lot of fun to play. I did enjoy that.
Yeah.
That's by a developer called Lo-Fi People.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. What's up next?
Well, next up is what I think we thought was one of the biggest games of the show.
Yeah. So, yeah, next is Heaven's Vault, which is the next game from Inkle Studios, who did 80 Days. They did the Sorcery games on mobile as well. And they were in the PlayStation room. So, that's like...
They did also have a setup elsewhere. I did see it again later where they were
the
PC version.
The Tentacle
Collective,
So, Heaven's Vault is a sort of space archaeology game. So you play as, I guess she's Middle Eastern or Egyptian. I think she's based on a real life archaeologist who I think is Egyptian, who's, you know, one of the people who's trying to save her artifacts of her culture in the midst of turmoil and sort of political unrest. So yeah, a really inspiring figure that inspired the character. It's the main character in the game. And it looks beautiful, as Inkle games do, and it's doing really interesting things, sort of with language and puzzles and gameplay and everything, which is another thing that Inkle games always do.
And just playing it for like 5 minutes, I was instantly kind of captivated by the system that they have for like I think the main mechanic of the game is that it's translation based. You come across inscriptions which you can't translate, but the character you play can kind of make educated guesses at what each of it might mean, and what that amounts to is that you are given a choice of things that you think it might mean based on the context around you. So if you like the first inscription you find is outside something that might be a temple or it might be a garden, and when you try to translate it, that those are the two options that you're given for one of the words. Does this mean temple or does this mean garden? And you kind of have to decide for yourself based on how you perceive the environment or you perceive the context, and then you select, and the game does not tell you whether
Tell
you're
you,
right or wrong.
yeah. I mean, that's the really great thing. There's this kind of sense of not knowing, which is unsettling for gamers because we kind of like certainty. So it's like kind of like to know if we've won, or as some people say, if we've beaten the game. And yeah, this game doesn't give you that.
And kind of the idea of it is that, like, I think reading the kind of background sort of stuff that's out there about the game already, I think some of it you will be able to like maybe confirm a bit more than others, but there doesn't seem like there's going to be a point where it actually confirms and gives you the answer. Instead, like your character's perceptions are changed depending on what you pick, which is a really interesting way of going about it. It's a really kind of just brave like experiment, which I think works really well in what we played at least. It'll be interesting to see how that can be stretched out for a whole game, but I'm absolutely going to see because like there's no way I'm not buying that game on launch.
It looks great. So your character has a robot assistant, who, yeah, it's just someone to chat to, really.
Six. I think like some of the bits that we didn't play, but I saw other people playing, there are bits where you are separated from that character and it's kind of a puzzle trying to get back together.
I'm sure. I'm sure that knowing the team, that they wouldn't just put a robot in
No. A
as
robot friend.
a yeah, as a useless sidekick that has serves no purpose to the game or the narrative, other than someone to talk to. And then it has this really interesting animation technique where you kind of fade forward. When she moves forward, she doesn't walk through the space. She kind of sort of like sort of fades, kind of what do you call it? I can't think of the word for the
Teleports.
effect. It's sort of it's like she traces. So as she moves, she traces forward. Which is really interesting.
Because rather than being designed like a 3D model, or both of the characters are like they're drawn,
Flat.
they're hand-drawn 2D images which display in at the different angles, kind of like they've been rotoscoped, which they I don't think they have, and
No.
it gives the game this kind of really kind of interesting comic book look to it, where it allows them to do a lot of things with framing which you couldn't necessarily do with a 3D character.
It looks beautiful.
It does.
And I think it's probably one of the best games that was there, I'd say.
Absolutely. I do think that kind of tracing, like slightly flickering movement style, it did. I got used to it really quickly, but it did give me a headache for the first like kind of couple of minutes of playing. It was a
Yeah,
bit.
I found that too, but then it's really different. Playing these games is really different when you're in a sort of expo environment than when you're sitting down, because you're more tired and stuff like that. So I did find it kind of tiring, but I'm sure I'd probably get used to it. It was really interesting, very sort of iconic kind of look to it. So yeah, it was cool. So Heaven's Vault, check it out. It'll be on PlayStation.
It will, and PC apparently.
So, and is that it?
That's the end of the. That's the end of the
more.
List of games we saw, but there is one more.
Yes.
And it's the game that was the reason we were kind of there in the first place. You were showing off something yourself.
I got into the Left Field collection, or we got into the Left Field collection. Because I'm making a game. I don't know if I've ever said that here before.
I just want to clarify, when Shella says we, she doesn't mean me. She means a completely different way. I'm nothing to do with this.
So, it is myself, Claire, and Sharon. And we are Threefold Games, and we're making a game called Before I Forget, which is a narrative exploration game. So it kind of gets, I suppose, on the first look at it, you'd say it's like Gone Home. I'd say atmospherically and aesthetically, we've tried to make it quite different. I don't know. Drew's played it. Drew could.
I have, and like that. You described pretty well. It does feel like Gone Home in sort of like when you begin it and in premise, but it soon becomes quite clear that it's doing something quite different. It's exploring a different kind of subject, which is, you play as a lady who is suffering with dementia, and it's kind of an exploration of that through exploring her house, and it explores her life and her condition through that. Mm-hmm. And it does some really interesting things with color, and I'm biased, but I really like it, and I think it's really good. And
thank you very much.
That's right. And like, I was watching people play it at Left Field, and people seemed to be really interested in it as well. There were a couple of people there was one person who spotted it and said, "Ooh, it's Before I Forget," and word of mouth was getting around, I think.
Yay! That's so nice. Yeah, we had a really great response, and thank you to anyone who was there and played it and said nice things, because it makes us really happy and helps us carry on, because when you're doing these things, you sometimes think, are we just insane? Is this just a fool's errand? So going to shows like that is really important and really nice, and for all those people, especially in Left Field, where people are doing things that are a bit more experimental, it's like the heart and soul kind of thing. I'm sure everyone I spoke to really on the show floor was just there going, thank you for liking our game.
So
it's a really nice atmosphere there, isn't it?
It really is.
At Rest,
it's a
nice one, so if you ever get a chance.
Highly recommend, just go around and play some of the interesting stuff which you might otherwise not have kind of, which otherwise wouldn't have popped up on your radar. I had a really great time there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a good one, Congratulations and thank you to all the people behind EGX Rest and Left Field.
And
cool.
And like all the people who were we met so many people, like so many indie devs, and it turns out that indie devs are just like the nicest bunch of people.
They are. They're good. Cool. So those were the things that we picked out from EGX, although there was loads of stuff that we've missed that we also loved. There was so much great stuff. So if there's something that, let us know in the chat comments, and where can they do that? Drew?
All sorts of places. Probably the best one is to follow us on Twitter at @AreYouTheCast and get in touch with us. You can also leave comments on, we are at gameindustry.com. In the podcast section. You can find us on Spotify and iTunes and wherever good podcasts are distributed for free. You can leave comments on the SoundCloud, or just all sorts of places. There's so many ways to get in touch with us.
Just speak at us.
Yes.
And we will speak back.
Shout into the ether.
Yes.
Climb up to the roof of your house. Tilt your head toward the sky and scream our names.
Yes.
And
the names of the games that we we should have played at EGX Res, of which there are so many.
Yeah.
There were so many good games you cannot imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So, just let us know what your favourites were.
Yeah.
And, so that was EGX Res 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.